It's nearly 12 o'clock and time for the KMXT Midday Report. Thank you for listening to KMXT on 100.1 FM. It's your public radio station. Proudly broadcasting from Kodiak, Alaska, where it's 57 degrees outside the station. It's a beautiful day so far. They're calling for a 30% chance of rain today and mostly cloudy skies, but it seems mostly sunny right now. We're already over the high of 55 predicted. 30% chance of rain tonight too, mostly before 10 p.m. Mostly cloudy skies tonight with a west wind around 5 miles per hour turning to the southeast this afternoon. Coming up on the Midday Report, the Munson Creek fire is getting closer to the Chena Hot Springs Resort. Small Bristol Bay fishing village of Ekuk uses trucks to haul their set nets. We find out how coastal erosion is challenging that. And the 4th of July in Kotzebue was not dampened by a little drizzle. Those stories and more after NPR headlines.
Live from NPR News, I'm Lakshmi Singh. COVID-19 shots may be getting into more arms, but not quite as many as the Biden administration had hoped by now. NPR's Windsor Johnson reports the White House is now going with a new strategy in confronting Delta, a more contagious and fast-spreading variant of coronavirus.
President Biden says the stepped-up efforts include door-to-door outreach, expanding mobile vaccine clinics, and a renewed effort to get the shots to pediatricians and primary care doctors. Biden says the administration is also sending out special teams to COVID hotspots.
They're going to help states that have particular problems prevent, detect, and respond to the spread of the Delta variant among unvaccinated people in communities with low vaccination rates.
Biden says the nation will be nearing 160 million fully vaccinated people in the next several days. The president had set a deadline of inoculating 70% of American adults with at least one dose of the vaccine by July 4th, but fell slightly short of that goal. Windsor Johnston, NPR News, Washington.
More bodies are being found in the debris of what used to be Champlain Tower South condominiums in Surfside, Florida. Miami-Dade County Mayor Daniela Levine-Cava delivered another grim update today in the search for victims that began nearly 2 weeks ago.
We have recovered 4 additional victims. The number of confirmed deaths is now 32, with 26 of those identified. 191 people are accounted for, and we have 113 reports of people who are potentially unaccounted for.
More bad weather could hamper the search. Tropical storm Elsa is approaching. The governor has expanded a state of emergency to 26 counties. U.S. Central Command estimates more than 90% of the withdrawal process is now complete in Afghanistan. Last week, the U.S. effectively ended 20 years of military operations in the country when it handed over Bagram Airfield to Afghan military forces. Police in Hong Kong say they've arrested 9 people suspected of planning attacks with homemade bombs around the city. 16 were among them. The arrests come as the Beijing-backed government cracks down on dissent. Here's NPR's John Ruich.
Police say they found explosives and other bomb-making equipment at a hostel in a crowded part of the city. The suspects allegedly intended to blow up courts, train lines, trash cans, and traffic tunnels under the city's iconic Victoria Harbor. Then they planned to leave Hong Kong. Police say they belong to a pro-independence group called Returning Valiant, according to local news outlet RTHK. The former British colony has been racked by political tension in recent years, with many upset about China's tightening grip. In 2019, Hong Kong saw a series of large and at times violent protests. Beijing responded by imposing a tough national security law on the territory last year. Critics say authorities have been using it to silence dissent. John Ruich, NPR News.
This is NPR.
NPR News is brought to you in part by Providence Kodiak Island Counseling Center. For an appointment or more information, 481-2400.
Fire officials have issued an evacuation order for residents in the area of the Munson Creek Fire near Chena Hot Springs Resort east of Fairbanks. Alaska state troopers announced the evacuation for anyone beyond mile 48, Chena Hot Springs Road, in a statement yesterday afternoon. Motorists in the area are asked to use caution due to thick smoke and firefighting equipment on the road. The State Division of Forestry says the Munson Creek fire has burned about 19,700 acres so far. It was caused by lightning about 2.5 weeks ago. Forestry officials say crews have been putting pumps and sprinklers around structures in the area. There are a total of 116 firefighters assigned to the Munson Creek fire, including crews on the ground and in the air. The fire officials say two new crews, the University of Alaska Fairbanks and Gannett Glacier crews, are en route to help fight the fire. Meantime, the Division of Forestry says one of its firefighters was seriously injured Saturday in a rollover crash in Chena Hot Springs Road. Officials say the firefighter was ejected from the state forestry truck and, after initial treatment, medevaced to an Anchorage hospital and listed in serious but stable condition. Officials say a forecast of cooler weather, higher humidity, and the possibility of rain should help slow the fire's growth. Firefighters are focused on protecting the Chena Hot Springs Resort and its area cabins from the Munson Creek wildfire. KUAC's Dan Bross has this report.
The Munson Creek fire is burning primarily in a remote, limited protection area, but worked its way from a ridge to Chena Hot Springs Resort over the long holiday weekend.
Slowly crawling down this hillside.
State Forestry spokesperson Tim Mowry says erratic winds caused a flare-up Monday afternoon, resulting in firefighters being pulled back from a line and an evacuation order being issued for the resort and surrounding area.
Five trooper cars showed up, talked to the staff and the guests at Chena Hot Springs to make them aware of the situation. They went door to door to all the cabins along Chena Hot Springs Road down to mile 48.
Mowry stresses that the resort and area cabins are set up to ward off the flames.
Got hose and pumps and sprinkler systems around all the structures around the resort.
We're safer here than any place else.
Bernie Carl is president of Chena Holdings, the holding company for employee-owned Chena Hot Springs Resort. Carl says the resort has a wildfire response plan and equipment.
Fire trucks, dozers, loaders, equipment all here ready to fight the fire.
No structures have been lost, but Carl says about 1,500 acres of resort property had burned as of yesterday, and that staff were moved from employee housing on the outskirts of the resort.
The fire was close to the employee housing, so we put sprinklers all around the area and we moved them into the hotel because that was a much safer area. And we moved our horses out of a paddock and moved them into a corral that's 5 acres fenced in closer to the resort.
Carl emphasizes that the resort is operating and new guests continue to arrive, guided by a pilot car along the last stretch of Chena Hot Springs Road. The decision to stay open and not evacuate has drawn local criticism on social media. Forestry's Mowry says no one can be forced to leave, but underscores that staying puts firefighters at additional risk.
If they have to worry about saving people that did not evacuate, it just takes their focus away from what they're trying to accomplish.
Cooler temperatures and rain showers are forecast to slow fire activity over the next couple of days, but Mowry says there's no guarantee.
We are trying to position more people out there, more equipment out there.
Mowry says additional crews expected to arrive today will swell the number of firefighters working the Munson Creek blaze to about 200. He says smoke has limited aerial operations at times, but both water and retardant drops remain an option. With help from KUAC's Robin and Dan Bross in Fairbanks.
Each summer, the small Bristol Bay fishing village of Akuk swells with set net fishers ready to tap the bountiful run. Akuk operates differently than other set net beaches in the bay. Fishers rely on trucks to carry their catch to the local processor. As fishing in the village evolved with technology and product demands, so has the coastline. Rapid erosion threatens structures and set net sites across the beach. KDLG's Tyler Thompson met with folks in Akuk and has the story.
It's mid-morning in Akuk as people get ready to pull nets from the beach and pick fish. Kay Andrews, an Alaknagik resident, is cutting a Chinook salmon for dinner later.
I think what makes us unique is we have Ecock Fisheries, and they support their fishermen by providing ice, and we deliver by vehicles, trucks.
Ecock is different from many other beaches in Bristol Bay. Fishers are able to set nets by truck, and the local processor collects catches from truck beds rather than a tender collecting fish from skiffs. The beach acts as natural infrastructure for the fishery, but the rapidly eroding coastline takes away a top layer of gravel. That causes weight issues for the trucks delivering large catches to the processor about a mile away. The village is southeast of Dillingham, and two winter watchmen live there year-round. Andrews and her family have a long history of set netting in the village. Her grandfather ran Columbia Ward fisheries for over 20 years, and her grandmother has sites along the bluff where her cousin fishes. She says set netting by truck gives Ecuc fishers a slight advantage over those that transport their catch by boat.
I think we can get our fish processed quicker versus getting it into a holding cell in a processor and then getting it barged to the cannery site. So we pick the fish out of the net, place it in the slush water or iced water, and then we deliver it to the cannery.
That advantage has waned in recent years, with the introduction of ice and refrigerated seawater systems to chill fish on boats.
You know, I think days are different now compared to what my grandfather used to do. They used to pick fish one by one with a pick on the beach, with no ice.
With no ice. Yes.
But that was all canned back then.
Further down the beach, another set netter, Julie Weiss, is picking fish with her son Ryan. Weiss grew up fishing in Ecuc, and each season they return to work on the family site. She says some of that change is due to a demand for higher quality salmon.
Now there's a lot of fillets, people want pretty stuff, and everyone's aware of it. People pick their nets and clean them much more. The ropes, the nets, the lead lines, all much better. So in that way it's changed a lot, but same concept.
Beyond new tech and products, the rapidly eroding coastline looms over the fishers. The village is losing about 5 feet of coastline per year, a rate that's doubled over the last century. Set netter Jamie O'Connor grew up in Ecuc. As a kid, O'Connor would play and climb the bluffs.
It's been really interesting to look at it through that lens and see how the shore ice conditions in the winter are impacting how quickly the bluff is eroding. It's made of silt and composite rock that's pretty vulnerable to the ocean.
Weather events like severe windstorms rip away large chunks of the coastline. Each season, Fish and Game sets regulations for how big or wide a site can be. O'Connor says they have to make constant adjustments to their sites.
You know, we're all happy to do that, but it makes you a little more aware of how the coast is changing. But at the same time, it has been changing my whole life and my great-grandparents. I mean, my great-great-grandmother had a wall tent out on First Creek, and she would stay there and watch her net. And that's the site that people in our family still fish, but it looks very, very different.
Researchers from the University of Alaska Fairbanks traveled to the region this summer to install new erosion monitoring equipment. Ecuc's Village Council also recently applied for a climate change and resiliency grant. Kay Andrews hopes to see a long-term solution for the village.
I could tell this year the tides, they're a lot higher. I've never really witnessed 24-foot tides as much as we have this season, this year. I think it's the grandmother's prayers that are still being answered, that our cabin is still up, because we're right on the beach here. I think in all, we need to have a seawall. Starts at the cannery.
Despite the threat of rapid erosion, optimism thrives in Ecuc. People are happy to return to their sites with family and friends like the Andrews, Weiss, and O'Connor families. And a surge of salmon is providing hope for a bountiful season. That morning was the start of a record-setting push of sockeye up the Nooshigak. While some people said it was a slow morning for most camps, the trucks never stopped hauling fish. In Dillingham, I'm Tyler Thompson.
Cloudy skies and a light drizzle didn't dampen the spirits of the residents of Kotzebue on the 4th of July as hundreds gathered across the town to celebrate. As KOTC's Wesley Early reports, this year's celebration brought back some of the exciting in-person events that had been canceled last year due to the COVID-19 pandemic.
On July 4th, 2020, about 3 months after the COVID-19 pandemic shut down much of the world, the only major event in Kotzebue commemorating the holiday was a parade.
Last year, it was pretty close to shut down.
That's Chad Nordlum, the head of the city of Kotzebue's Parks and Rec Department. He says this year's celebration didn't have the same events as in pre-pandemic years, like the muktuk eating contest, tug of war, or blanket toss, but it was more open than last year.
Well, the way we approached it was to try to avoid the really big gatherings and kind of spread people out throughout town and have kind of smaller gatherings and events. We want people to get together and see their friends and have good food, but yeah, we want to avoid the huge gatherings, so the fairgrounds is closed.
Residents were able to apply with the city to set up vendor stands along the route of the parade of vehicles. After the parade, local organizers began to gather near the Kotzebue Sound for the Lovey Harris Baby Beauty Contest. The annual event allows families to show off the traditional regalia of their families. It was held virtually last year. Ashley Stickman organized the event. She says the gathering was smaller due to crowd restrictions and the short notice of the event.
I wasn't even sure until about 2 weeks before 4th of July that we were going to have it. The numbers typically are doubled. We normally have anywhere from, I would say, 20 to 25 babies in the 0 to 11-month category, and then easily close to 30 in the older category.
Despite the smaller pool of baby talent this time around, the contestants dazzled the crowd. While some were decked out in colorful Atik looks, parkas, and muckluck boots, others got more creative, with one wearing a tanned she-fish outfit and another wearing clothes sewn from their father's military uniform. But there could be only one grand prize.
For our overall grand champion of the 2021 Lovey Harris Baby Beauty Contest goes to Jennifer Claire Gupak Nanok.
As Gupak Nanok squirmed around, her mother, Kristen Sheldon, described her regalia.
Her Atik look was made by Cindy Lincoln. And the parka was made by my grandma Mae Douglas from Wolverine and calfskin in the back.
Babies also won for most patriotic, most creative, and most traditional. Stickman says all of the babies went home with an award.
I mean, you know how crazy and hectic it can be at some point. This is what makes it worth it. Doing the participation awards, getting to recognize the babies for their personalities, getting to actually see them in their regalia.
Later in the day, locals reconvene next to the Kotzebue Sound for the last major event of the day, the Miss Arctic Circle and Miss Teen Arctic Circle pageant. The contestants opened the pageant with a group dance performance by the Northern Lights Dancers. Five teenagers and two young women competed for Miss Teen Arctic Circle and Miss Arctic Circle, respectively. Miss Teen Arctic Circle was crowned first.
The 2021 Miss Teen Arctic Circle is Miss Teen Native Village of Kotzebue.
Inuggikuk Caitlin Jade Smith credited the closeness of her community in helping her succeed. She says she's most excited about meeting other pageant contestants at the Miss Teen World Eskimo Indian Olympics, or WIO pageant.
Meeting a lot of people that already know how to make a difference and learning from them and starting to make change. Learning from everyone around me has helped me with all of my values.
The crowd was equally excited when Miss Manila Kalixana Autumn Madison won Miss Arctic Circle shortly after. Madison won Miss Teen Arctic Circle a couple years ago, but she says she's much happier winning the Miss Arctic Circle pageant.
This is a greater feeling of excitement. The first time I won, it was handed down to me. I wasn't crowned on 4th of July, so this is more exciting, you know, actually being crowned on the 4th.
Madison says she's looking forward most to the talent portion of the upcoming Miss WIO pageant. And as the 4th of July festivities came to a close in Kotzebue, local officials say they're eager for next year, when they hope to reopen the fairgrounds and bring the celebration to its full glory. Reporting in Kotzebue, I'm Wesley Early.
A string of suspected arson cases in the Two Rivers Pleasant Valley community east of Fairbanks has drawn the attention of the FBI. An Alaska State Troopers dispatch says they're working with the federal agency and the state fire marshal on an investigation into the arson incidents. The latest occurred last week when three homes, including two that were occupied, were burned. Troopers are seeking the public's help in their investigation, especially those who may have security camera footage. An Anchorage-based, an Anchorage faith-based homeless shelter for women is suing Anchorage's Equal Rights Commission over recent changes to the city's anti-discrimination laws. The Downtown Hope Center says the new laws force it to admit transgender women, which goes against its religious beliefs, the Anchorage Daily News reported. The Hope Center brought a similar case in 2018. The city ultimately agreed to pay a $100,000 settlement. The 2018 case was also part of the impetus behind recent changes to the anti-discrimination law, Title V, which it passed in May. Some of the changes expanded the law to apply to homeless shelters. In its lawsuit, the Hope Center says the 50 or so women who sleep at the shelter each night may have been abused, raped, and victimized, and would be further traumatized by being forced to sleep and change in the same room as transgender women.
This is Alaska Fish Radio. I'm Lainey Welch. Lots of fishing going on besides salmon. More after this.
Grundin's Deck Boss 15-inch boots feature a protective toe cap, uppers that won't crack, and compression-molded rubber outsoles for better traction on wet decks. Made in USA.
July brings lots of fishing updates from southeast Alaska to the Bering Sea. The biggest fish story so far is at Bristol Bay, where hauls of sockeye salmon neared 2 million fish on each of 2 days last week. The bay's red salmon catch so far is at nearly 12 million fish. We'll update more Alaska salmon catches tomorrow. In other fisheries, catches for Dungeness crabbers at southeast were going slow so far for 163 boats, but prices of $4.20 a pound are more than double last year's. The crab fishery will run through mid-August and reopen in October. Kodiak crabbers were getting 4.25 for their dungies, also more than double. A Golden King crab fishery for quota holders opens at the Aleutians and Adak on August 1st for a combined catch of just under 6 million pounds. Norton Sound opened for king crab in mid-June. A black rockfish fishery at Kodiak closed on July 2nd. Prince William Sound's pot shrimp fishery remains open until mid-September with a catch of 70,000 pounds. Also in the Sound, a lingcod fishery opened on July 1st. Fishing for lingcod and rockfish opened at Cook Inlet. Alaska's halibut catch has topped 7.5 million pounds, and prices remain well over $6 a pound at most ports, reaching 7.25 at Homer. Prices for sablefish or black cod also were on the rise in 5 weight categories, ranging from $1.10 for 2-pounders to 6.25 for 7-ups. Alaska's weather vane scallop fishery opened in the Gulf and Bering Sea on July 1st. Fishing for cod, pollock, flounders, and other groundfish continues throughout the Gulf of Alaska and Bering Sea. Find links to Alaska fish catches and more at AlaskaFishRadio.com. Fish Radio is also brought to you by OBI Seafoods. In Kodiak, I'm Lainey Welch.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Hello, this is the Alaska Department of Fish and Game in Kodiak with Kodiak Commercial Salmon Fishery Advisory Announcement Number 14, date issued 9 a.m. on July 5th. There will be a 57-hour commercial salmon fishing period from noon Tuesday, July 6th, until 9 p.m. Thursday, July 8th in the Inner Aikuluk section of the Southwest Kodiak District. Closed waters will be increased from noon Tuesday, July 6th until 9 p.m. Thursday, July 8th in the Inner Aikuluk section and includes those waters within 500 yards of the stream mouth of Aikuluk River, stream number 256201. As previously announced, there will be an 81-hour commercial salmon fishing period from noon Tuesday, July 6th until 9 p.m. Friday, July 9th in the following areas. In the Northwest Kodiak District, except for the Kijuyak Bay section, will remain closed. The Cape Alitak, Humpy Deadman, Alitak Bay, Mosier Bay, and Olga Bay sections of the Alitak District. The Northeast Kodiak District, except for the Buskin River section, will remain closed. The Eastside Kodiak District, except for the Inner Ugak Bay section, will remain closed. And the Afognak District, except for the Duck Bay, Iziut Bay, and Inner and Outer Katoy Bay sections, remain closed. There will be a 57-hour commercial salmon fishing period from noon Tuesday, July 6th, until 9 p.m. Thursday, July 8th, in the Mainland District. Through 12:01 a.m. July 6th, fishermen are reminded that in the Kodiak area, king salmon 28 inches or greater in length may not be retained by purse seine gear in the commercial fishery and must be returned to the water unharmed. After 12:01 a.m. July 6th, until further notice, within the Kodiak area, only those portions of the northwest and southwest Kodiak districts south of a latitude of Cape Kuliak, king salmon 28 inches or greater in length may not be retained by purse seine gear in the commercial fishery and must be returned to the water unharmed. Concerning the North Shelikof Strait fishery, short notice in-period closures may occur for seine fisheries in the seaward zones of the North Shelikof Strait area as designated in the North Shelikof Strait Sockeye Salmon Management Plan. Closure announcements may occur at 8:30 a.m., 10 a.m., noon, 2 p.m., 5 p.m., or 8 p.m. on VHF Channel 6. The following areas are currently open until further notice and will close to commercial salmon fishing at 9 p.m. Friday, July 9th. Fowl Bay Special Harvest Area and the Waterfall Bay Special Harvest Area. Closed water adjustments. Closed waters are currently reduced until 9 p.m. Thursday, July 9th. In Fowl Bay to the stream terminus at Hidden Lake Creek, stream number 251406. And in Waterfall Bay to the stream terminus at Little Waterfall Creek, stream number 251822. And to the stream terminus at Big Waterfall Creek, stream number 251821. The following areas remain open to commercial salmon fishing until further notice. The Outer Aikuluk section of the Southwest Kodiak District and the Inner and Outer Upper Station sections of the Alitak District. Closed waters are currently reduced until further notice in the Inner Upper Station section of the Alitak District, and the waters will remain open to the stream terminus of Olga Creek, stream number 257301. Cost recovery fisheries have begun in Spearin Bay Special Harvest Area, also known as Tailrod Cove, and the Spearin Bay Special Harvest Area will remain closed to common property fishing. Fishing opportunities will depend on the ability of KRAA cost recovery needs, and all cost recovery information may be obtained by calling 486-6559. Other closed waters are shown in the Kodiak Area Salmon Statistical Chart, detailed in Commercial Salmon Fishing Regulations, and statistical charts, harvest strategies, and commercial salmon fishing regulations are available at the Kodiak Fish and Game Office. And, of course, the most recent salmon fishery information may be obtained by calling the department's 24-hour record-a-phone at 486-4559. Thank you very much. Good luck fishing. This is the Alaska Department of Fish and Game.
Good afternoon, and welcome to your Island Messenger for Tuesday. It is the sixth day of July, the year 2021. The sun rose today at 5:19. It won't set again until 11:08. That will give us 17 hours and 49 minutes of daylight, a loss of 2 minutes and 9 seconds compared to yesterday. Our record high for this day was 76, set in 49, and our record low is 39, set in 38. Presently 58 degrees, really pleasant weather out there. They're still calling for a 30% chance of rain, mostly cloudy skies and high near 56. So we went right past that. For tomorrow, very similar weather. 40% chance of rain, they're saying now for tomorrow, mainly after 10 a.m., mostly cloudy skies, high near 56, west winds to 10. And for Thursday, 30% chance of showers after 10 a.m., cloudy skies, high near 58. So pretty similar weather to what you're looking at right now through Thursday. We have a high tide coming up here on the east side that will happen at 1:27 this afternoon and be 5.7 feet. Our low tide after that will be at 6:09 p.m., and be 3.1 feet. Over on the west side, and these are Zacher Bay tides, your high tide will be at 1:35 this afternoon and be 10.7 feet, followed by a low tide at 7:07, and that will be a 4.5 foot tide.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT three times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m., during the Midday Report at 12:20, and in the evening at 7 o'clock. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.